joined by George Barder from Occupy London, who was outside St. Paul's from day one, I believe. George, what happened last night?
So a largely peaceful eviction of the camp took place, and that to me is very, very important, that there weren't any really ugly scenes that could be used to divert too much from the very, very important message of this movement, which remains sort of, well, in fact, is increasingly important as every month passes, with the government ignoring the real needs of the economy and the society, and not to mention the integrity of life itself, which is very much under the cosh in terms of a failure to deal with converging ecological crises we have. But yeah, I mean, we go onwards and outwards from here. St Paul's will remain a very significant part of Occupy London. The decision was against the tents and bedding and not against our right to protest, speak freely and assemble. The corporation was sort of bending over backwards the last few months to emphasise that apparently they have no problem with the protest itself. So we'll very much be testing that commitment, I think, in the coming months.
So was this a success or a failure for the movement?
I think it's very important, certainly at this early stage, that we don't think in such binary terms. I mean, you know, there have been, you know, obvious victories in terms of forcing even the Conservative Party to start talking about crony capitalism or moral capitalism or whichever turn of phrase Cameron has been using recently. But getting politicians to talk about something is a very, very different business from actually getting them to do something about it, especially when the interests of the economically very, very powerful are at stake. You know, I think most of us are aware that the majority of the Tory Party's funding comes from the city. And just to remind anyone, we are occupying the city because the city has occupied the government of Westminster. And until we really do something about that, it seems unrealistic to expect that we're actually going to deal with the very systemic causes of the economic crisis. Not to mention actually bring about a society where we start prioritising the things that are most important to people on the ground and that actually make our society decent, like providing decent access to healthcare and education, and providing spaces where vulnerable young people can actually go and engage with each other. I mean, all the thousands of things that we've been told we can't afford, because apparently it's politically unfeasible to take some of the ridiculous amount of money that the people at the top invented in the city over the last 20 years back from them to pay for the things that we need.
And can you expand on these sort of allegations of collusion by St. Paul's that Occupy London have said about the clearance of the steps?
Yeah, well, apparently, I mean, you know, this is unconfirmed, but the police were told us very specifically that the cathedral had authorised the clearance of the steps. There were a lot of people that wanted to be, you know, didn't want to sort of actively, peacefully resist, and wanted to make very, very clear that they wanted nothing to do with any potential violence, and those people retreated to the steps, which were not part of the court case. It was only the bit of church land in front of the steps and the bit next to it where we've been camping that was covered by the order. So we were hoping that the cathedral would provide some kind of sanctuary for us on the steps, but that wasn't to be. But that's not surprising. I mean, you know, we're talking about an institution in the Christian church that for about 1700 years has been utterly complicit with the worst brutalities of power. The Church of England has at the very least acquiesced to slavery, imperialism, etc. So it shouldn't be surprising, given that seven out of the nine trustees of St Paul's are, you know, ex-head of this bank and this asset management company, that they have sided roughly with the corporation and not with genuine Christian principles. But I personally am inspired that so many Christians have come out, you know, on the right side of the theological fault line that this protest has exposed.
And in terms of how the eviction was carried out by police, I know you obviously disagreed with the sort of legality of it, but in terms of the way they conducted it, did you have any complaints about that? Or?
Most of it was okay. I mean, I'm very keen myself not to have this sort of framed as a battle between police and protesters, because let's face it, it's the police's pensions on the line as much as anyone else's. Most of it was okay. I mean, I was sort of dragged from the steps without injury. I was with a number of Christians actually praying on the steps of the cathedral, and we were dragged away. There was one very disturbing story that I haven't been able to confirm yet, but that one of the people pulled down to the ground had his leg broken, and then with a broken leg was actually strip searched and dragged away half naked. That obviously is a very, very disturbing story. We had another story.
That's not confirmed, you said, is it?
That's not confirmed. I'm very concerned to get some news on that. There was another slightly disturbing story that a disabled homeless man who's been very much part of the camp for months was told that he was being given a place to stay, but was left in front of a hotel that didn't have any disabled access at 3:30 in the morning, and just left to fend for himself in the cold of the night, and that seemed a great shame. But you know, other than that, it's, you know, the police were doing their jobs. You know, I personally wouldn't be a policeman, I wouldn't be a soldier, but, you know, just as I think in terms of understanding things like the illegal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's important not to focus on the, you know, the foot soldiers on the ground, but on the people at the top who make the decisions. The same absolutely with the police, you know. They're doing what they're told, and what they were told to do was remove what I maintain was an absolutely democratic expression of our rights to protest, assemble and speak freely, and the court decision was unjust. It seemed that the master of the rolls at one point was considering actually engaging with the very sensible and reasoned arguments we put forward. But then he turned around a week later and far more guiltily, it seemed, than a week before, said that there was no case to answer. So it was always when rather than if. And as I said before, I'm glad that this has happened without there being too much ugliness that would divert from the very important issues that justify our being here in the first place.
And finally, what would you say to the naysayers? You know, there's a lot of people coming out saying they're glad you've gone and you shouldn't have been there and you didn't achieve anything, and, you know, all kinds of, you know, you're all trustafarians. What would you say to those people?
Well, I mean, it's important to step back from those narratives and realise that we've been called virtually every name under the sun. You know, we're either homeless crusties or we're trustafarians or we're whatever label can be thrown at us to actually avoid engaging with the political substance while we're here. And the reality is that millions of people are already feeling the very, very tight squeeze of the cuts, even though they've barely begun. You know, we're closing down community centres, decimating healthcare, education, etc. And if anyone that thinks that stuff is not worth protesting about, then I would love them to come and talk to me. You know? And especially for those in power that have been fueling those kind of diversionary narratives, the Boris Johnsons and David Camerons of the world, you know, I challenge any of them to actually come and have a conversation with us, you know. And then we've been issuing that challenge for the last 4 months, but they don't want to do it. You know, the Corporation of London, similarly, has been asked to comment by all sorts of media on what's happened, and they've refused to actually come out and speak openly as we have. So, you know, people should make their own decisions, but I think it's very important that people understand what interests many parts of the media are serving, and it's really not the interest of the majority, it's the interest of the corporations who pay for it. It's the interest of the city that has made out like bandits over the last decades by inventing trillions of pounds that didn't exist, and current and future taxpayers for decades to come are being told that they need to bear the cost of this crisis, and they need to pay with the basic services that make their lives decent now. But as I said, if that's not something worth standing up for, then what is? And I, by the way, I really think that the problem with most people is not getting them to agree with most of our goals, and then the fact that the world is in a mess in all sorts of ways that it shouldn't be. It's just inspiring people that they can make a difference. Because, you know, how many times do we hear people go, well, yeah, of course you're right and it's bad, but we can't change things, can we? You know, that's what we need to challenge. For 200 years odd, we have got together in large numbers and challenged concentrated power and won major victories for decency and for democracy. With slavery, got rights for women, got decent working conditions, etc. And we now face a very real threat that all those victories are going to be rolled back in the name of paying for this crisis. And that really can't be right.